Hello, I'm Dan Weinberg, along with CPA and attorney Jim Lang, with an emergency audio presentation. On November 2nd, 2015, President Obama signed the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015 into law. What most Americans don't know is that this new law bans two of the most effective methods ever devised for maximizing your Social Security payments: apply and suspend, and filing a restricted application, both explained clearly and in detail in this audio production. However, what many also don't know is that the federal government has granted certain Americans a six-month grace period to take proactive steps so they can enjoy the benefits of the most favorable Social Security strategy that will be banned forever after May 1, 2016. In this special presentation, Jim is going to tell you if and how you can be grandfathered to avoid these losses. As I mentioned before, this is a crucial topic and it is time sensitive. Those who qualify and want to take advantage of these rules will have to act before May of 2016. CPA and attorney James Lang has made great efforts to compile, analyze, and deliver this information to you while it is still timely. With over three decades in financial and estate planning, he is the president of three interrelated companies. His CPA firm, registered investment advisory firm, and law firm provide financial solutions for retirement-age clients with IRAs and retirement plans. He has been following this law change closely and recognizes that there is a group of citizens who can take advantage of these strategies before they disappear. So, Jim, could you begin by telling our audience what the agenda is for this audio program?
Okay, Dan. So, first we're going to talk about maximizing Social Security, obviously in light of the new law. We're going to talk about grandfathering the existing law for those who qualify and who does qualify and who doesn't. We're going to be, really the essence is going to be spousal benefits, but we're also going to cover the survivor benefits. The areas, by the way, that we will not be covering is divorce benefits, and that's actually very important, but we can only do so much in so much time. Then we'll also talk about the synergy between Social Security maximization and Roth IRA conversions. So why don't we do a large forest change, and then we'll get into the trees. So the new law affects Social Security for certain married and divorced individuals. Many recipients, people who are already receiving Social Security or people who have already applied and suspended, will be grandfathered. Others will be grandfathered, but only if they take proactive steps between now and April 30th, 2016. The areas that have really changed, it's my favorite techniques in the world for Social Security. One is called apply and suspend, and the other one is claim now, claim more later, which is also known as a restricted application. Now, before we get into the new law, I want to get into the existing law, how it works, because otherwise, if I start talking about the changes before we have a base, it will not be meaningful. Most of Social Security has not changed, so this is not a sea change, although for married couples who this applies to, it's very important that they get this right. So first, we're going to talk about the existing law, then we're going to talk about the new law, and then we're also going to talk about the transition period and when the new law takes effect and how you can qualify for the benefits of the new law.
Now, I've heard you say that less than 3% of the population makes the optimal decisions regarding Social Security. Have you ever thought that they were right and you were wrong? Why should our audience believe you instead of following the wisdom of the 97% of the people who made an important decision that impacted their financial security?
Have I ever considered that they were right and I was wrong? No, that's not even a consideration. But in all seriousness, last year in 2014, I wrote an article regarding marital benefits for Social Security. And in order to verify or have readers and listeners be able to trust the information, I actually published the article in a magazine called Trusts and Estates Magazine, which mainly goes to CPAs, attorneys, financial advisors, trust officers, etc. But it is also a peer-reviewed journal, which is very important because that meant that they went through with painstaking detail all the analysis that I had done. So obviously that was before the new law came about. But anyway, the point is I had a very good understanding of what the existing law was. And if you understand the existing law, the new law isn't all that tough to understand. It might be tough to implement the nuances and individualize to each circumstance, but I had a pretty good idea. I was just quoted on CNBC. And the other thing is that our office actually, we call it running the numbers. Now, we have several computer programs designed to help maximize Social Security and retirement benefits for people who qualify. But we actually have very skilled people in-house who really get it, and they get the software, and they understand the basics, and they have put together information, much of which, as I just mentioned, is peer-reviewed. And if that's not enough for you, and I understand, because one of the problems that the American public has is that there's so much noise out there, and there's so much, very frankly, crap out there, and different so-called advisors are trying to get you to take your Social Security early and then buy their annuities and do stuff that I don't think is in most people's best long-term interest. One of the ways that I have combated that is with my radio show, where I try to get the top experts in the country, and I read their books, and I develop intelligent questions. I don't try to say gotcha, so I send them the questions ahead of time, and then we have what I consider a substantive radio talk show. Now, we have had shows like this we've actually had several with Larry Kotlikoff, who is the author of the number one best-selling book on Social Security. In fact, some people blame Larry for the new changes in the law because he made it so clear what the taking advantage of, let's say, the old law or the law that we are hoping to grandfather ourselves on or before April 30th. But anyway, we've had several shows with him, and he gets it, and he and I are in agreement. We've also had multiple shows with Jane Bryan Quinn. She is a great champion of retired Americans, and particularly retired women. And for her, getting Social Security right is not just a financial issue, but it's actually a woman's issue, on the theory that women will likely survive us men by maybe 7 years if we're the same age, sometimes longer if they are younger. And much of what we are doing is for the survivor of the couple. We've also had Jonathan Clemens on multiple times. He was for, I think, 18 years, the principal personal finance writer for the Wall Street Journal. He is on board with my strategies. I shouldn't say my strategies, but we are all on board with the strategies that we are going to present. We have had Mary Beth Franklin, who is a noted expert actually on Social Security, writing the book. Now, this is for advisors, but it's Maximizing Your Client's Social Security Benefits. Then we also have had Elaine Floyd, and by the way, we are reading Elaine Floyd. She is the creator of a Social Security program for a group called The Horse's Mouth. Now, is that a great name or not? It's The Horse's Mouth, but the idea is they supply information to financial advisors. So we've really pretty much nailed this information. We have widespread agreement on our opinion. So I actually do feel that I have the authority to speak about this, and people should pay attention. All right, so here is the big picture. And this is the starting point, and this would apply whether you're single or married. In fact, to understand the base, let's just say for discussion's sake, not worry about the marital benefits, and let's just look at this as if you were single. And let's say that there were two individuals, and they were each 62 years old, and they had the identical earnings record for Social Security, they had the identical investment portfolio, they were in the identical tax situation, everything is the same for both of them. And one says, hey, I don't want to wait. I want my Social Security right now at age 62. Now, in order to compare him, let's say the I want it now versus I'm willing to wait till later recipient, we have to assume, to, if we're going to compare apples to apples, that if he wants it now, that he's going to take the money and he's going to invest the money. And even though Social Security is about, let's say, the equivalent to some extent of a fixed income, I'm going to still use a 4% rate of return. But anyway, so you have the first person who's taking Social Security at 62, based on his earnings record, he is compiling that money, he's investing that money at 4%. Now, to be fair, he is paying income taxes on the interest, dividends, and occasional capital gains of that money, but that money continues to ride. Now, the other person, and he is going to get raises by waiting. We're going to talk later on about how much those raises are, but basically he's going to get raises, and I'm going to oversimplify here, of roughly 8% between age 62 and age 70. But he, at age 70, he is starting with zero, but he's getting, in effect, the difference between 75% of his full retirement account benefit and 130, which is what Mr. I Want It Now is getting, versus 132% of his full retirement benefit. So anyway, the two keep investing their money, and then, depending on what assumptions you use, roughly the break-even point, or the point where the 70-year-old who waited is going to catch up to the 62-year-old who wanted it now, is roughly at age 82. Now, if they live till, let's say, into their 90s, say mid-90s or 95, age 95, the person who waited until age 70 is going to be better off by over $200,000. Using the assumptions that I did for the calculations, better off by $213,970. But here's the thing about this. It's very easy to say, well, gee, age 82. Am I going to make it to age 82? Well, I don't know. Maybe I'd rather be certain, make sure I get the money. I don't know if the Social Security is even going to be there, et cetera, et cetera. And it's easily, and plus people want to get their money early, so it's easy to rationalize reasons why you would want to take it early. But this isn't the point, and this is the point that, and to give credit where credit's due, where Larry Kotlikoff comes in and says, Larry says, don't think like an actuary, think like an economist. And here's the point. If you die early, you're dead. You don't have any financial problems when you're dead. So therefore, for the question of analyzing when you should take your Social Security, you should not fear dying early for financial purposes. What you should fear is living a long time and outliving your money. So it's really a conservative strategy to hold off. So what you're in effect doing is you're buying longevity insurance. Now, yes, you can get a longevity insurance product on the market, and I don't want to go into a long discussion with that, but I will tell you that the rates that the government is using and the assumptions that they are using for the people who are holding off till age 70 is much, 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 much more favorable than the insurance company that would give you some type of longevity insurance. So in effect, it's the cheapest longevity insurance you can buy to hold off. Now again, this is for single people. We'll get into the marital concepts later. But the idea is to start, if you're holding off longer, yes, you'll start out at a lower number, but the additional money that you'll be getting every month will, again, depending on it, on assumptions, maybe in your mid-80s for single people, but again, think like an economist, not an actuary.
Okay, now in the example that you just gave, the two taxpayers that you were comparing were ages 62 and 70. Tell us the reason that you picked those two ages.
Well, you're right, Dan. It's not a pure coincidence. Age 62 is the earliest time that you can apply for Social Security. Age 70 is the latest age that you can apply and still receive a benefit or an increased benefit because you waited. In other words, You can't, even if you wanted to, apply for a benefit for yourself before you turn 62, and there's no point in waiting after age 70, because let's say you don't do anything, you apply at age 71 or 72 or later, you're not going to get a bigger benefit, you just miss those years. So there's no reason to hold off after age 70, and you literally are not allowed to apply before age 62.
And some of our listeners may have heard the term full retirement age. Can you tell us what that is and why it's important?
Sure. The full retirement age, which for people who are born between 1943 and 1954, is age 66. It's an important concept because it is, in effect, the base of which Social Security is calculated. So if you take it before age 66, you're only going to get a percentage, starting with 75% of the full retirement age benefit. And if you hold off till 70, you're going to get 132% of your full retirement age benefit. And the other thing that's important is if you are still working, age 66 is the first year that your additional income from your work will not be will not reduce the amount of Social Security that you receive. So if you're 60, I hate when people are working and they're 65 years old and they take their Social Security because their Social Security benefit is going to decrease, when I would much, much rather they wait, get the increased amount, not have their income reduced by their wages, but age 66 is the first year that that will happen. Now, one of the ways that Congress is trying to keep the Social Security system solvent is by continually raising the full retirement age. So again, born between 1943 and 1954, the full retirement age is 66. If you were born in 1955, it would be 66 and 2 months. If you were born in 1956, then it would be 66 and 4 months. And it keeps getting later and later, just by a period of months, until 1960 and later, in which case it is age 67.
Now, can you compare the benefits of someone starting at 62 versus waiting until that full retirement age?
Okay, if you consider the full retirement age 100%, then starting at age, or X, if you will, then starting at age 62, you would get 75%, or three-quarters of what you would be entitled to at full retirement age. And then for every year that you wait, it goes up. So it starts at 75% at 62, then 80% at 63, 86.7% at 64, 93.3% at 65. Then when you reach age 66, that's 100% of your full retirement age.
Okay, now could you compare the benefits of someone waiting until age 70 versus applying at their full retirement age? And what happens if you apply after FRA?
Okay, so at 66, that's 100% of your benefit. Then for every year that you wait, you get an 8% raise in what you're going to get. Remember, this is for the rest of your life. So if you apply at 66, then it's 100%. If you apply at 67, it's 108%. If you apply at 68, 116%, at 69, 124%, at age 70, 132%. So again, age 70 is 132% of your full retirement benefit, but age 62 is only 75% of your full retirement benefit.
So how much can our listeners expect to receive?
Well, of course, that will depend. Obviously, it will depend on the credits that you earn during your working career. It will depend on the age in which you apply, and it will also depend on what strategies, which is what we're going to get into, that you utilize.
And what are some important websites that our listeners need to know?
Well, one thing that I would do if I was getting ready to apply for Social Security is I would want to make sure that the Social Security Administration has records of all the years that you worked. So one of the things that I would do as a precautionary belt and suspenders type measure is to get a hold of your Social Security earnings statement. And you can do that by going to www.socialsecurity.gov/mystatement. Again, I'm going to do that again. www.socialsecurity.gov/mystatement. Now, here's why this is so important. And you probably don't remember how much money exactly you earned in 1972 or whenever you did start. But here's what you probably do know. You would know if you had a big gap. So let's say that you're looking at your record and they're missing 2 or 3 years. And you know darn well that you didn't sit on your butt and do nothing for 2 or 3 years. So you know that there is a problem with their record of your earnings record. So now that's something that you're going to have to work through. But the point is you're going to take a look. You're going to find out to make sure that they have all the years accounted for. And again, would it really be best if you went back and you confirmed to the dollar what the earnings were? Yes. For most of us, probably it would be good enough to have an idea of what we earned and to make sure that those amounts were reflected on our earnings record. And again, you can do that at www.socialsecurity.gov/mystatement. Then, if you want to get an estimate of your benefits, you could go to www.socialsecurity.gov. Again, that's www.socialsecurity.gov. Click on Estimate Your Retirement Benefits, and they have kind of a handy-dandy calculator that you could use. And then, speaking of handy-dandy calculators, again, one that is publicly available for free is www.ssa.gov/planners/benefitcalculators.htm. Again, www.ssa.gov/planners/benefitcalculators.htm. Now, by the way, once you apply for benefits, you can't get the statement online. I don't know why that is. But again, once you apply for statements, you can't get the statement online.
All right, now it's time to get to the real meat of the issue that we're talking about today, the spousal benefits. First, let's talk about what hasn't changed.
All right, well, Dan, you make a good point. If you're single, nothing has changed. And I'm not going to cover divorce today like I'd mentioned. But let's just talk about the spousal benefit in general. The spousal benefit is one half of the primary worker's primary insurance amount. That's often shortened by calling it PIA, primary insurance amount, if you had started at full retirement age, again, age 66. And by the way, it would be, instead of half, it'd be 35% if you started a spousal benefit at age 62. But we don't even want to go there. We basically want people to hold off and get that increased income for the rest of their life. So let's do a quick example. Let's assume that John's primary insurance amount, that is the amount that he would collect at age 66, is $2,000. And let's assume that his wife's primary insurance amount, that is the amount that she would collect at age 66, is $800. So if she applied at full retirement age for a spousal benefit, rather than her getting $800, which would be the amount that she would get on her own record, she would get half of John's. So half of $2,000 is $1,000. So notwithstanding the fact that she would be getting $800 on her own record, in fact, on her own record, it could be zero, she would get $1,000 of John's that he would be entitled to when he is 66, or his primary insurance amount. So, a couple things that have not changed. The primary insurance worker must have filed for benefits in order for the spouse to qualify for a spousal benefit. The spouse must be at least 62 years old for a reduced benefit, or they must be 66 for a full spousal benefit. And the spousal benefit is based on the primary worker's primary insurance amount, or in other words, what the primary worker would be collecting at age 66. So let's say for discussion's sake that the primary worker either didn't collect or applied and suspended or didn't do anything at age 66, and then their spouse applied for a they have to have applied. But let's say that the spouse then collected a spousal benefit. It wouldn't help the spousal benefit for the primary worker to hold off past age 66 to collect.
Now, I want to mention here that this program is skipping the old law and the new law for divorcees. It is very important, but will not apply to everyone. Now, let's talk about survivor's benefits. How does that work, and has that changed?
Well, this is really important, and it's going to relate back to one of the reasons why it's so important to get at least one benefit as high as possible. And it's strategy, but here's the law, and then we'll talk about why the strategy is so important. So let's go back to John and Barbara, and let's assume that John's benefit at full retirement age is, actually, it doesn't even matter at full retirement age. It could be, or he could have actually been getting the 8% increases from his full retirement age until age 70, which would then make it, in effect, the amount at his primary insurance amount or at age 66 times 1.32. But let's just keep it simple and say that his benefit was $2,000 a month, and let's say that his wife was $1,200 a month. And one of them dies, and for our purposes at the moment, it doesn't matter which one. But after the first death, the survivor would be entitled to the higher of the two. So let's take the actuarially more likely case where he dies first. The wife would get the higher of the two, or she would get the $2,000. Now, it's still a financial loss because if they were both alive, they were getting $3,200. But if the husband dies, the wife will get the higher of her amount or his amount. In this case, his amount was the higher, which would be $2,000.
And is it important for the survivor that the person who dies made the best decision?
Well, this is really critical. So let's say for discussion's sake that John took the amount, he took his Social Security at age 66, or worse yet, at age 62. And let's assume that he had the stronger earnings record. And let's say that he died, and then his wife would be getting the survivor benefit, which would be the same as his benefit, for the rest of her life. Now, again, let's say that he collected at 62, she would be getting 75%, which might be a little bit more than $1,400. And she would be getting, and let's say that she lived another 30 years. She's going to be getting a pretty lousy benefit into her older age and eventual death. Now, let's say that he had waited till 70, and then he died. So instead of around $1,400, he'd get 1.32% times the 2,000, which what would that be? That'd be closer to $2,600, $2,700 compared to the $1,400. Not quite double, but substantially more. She would be getting that amount every month for the rest of her life. Plus, by the way, the cost of living increases, which substantially increases the difference between waiting and taking it early. That's one of Jane Bryan Quinn's big things. She hates to see the primary insurance amount worker, who at least in the old days was usually the man, she hates to see him take that Social Security early because it's not only dooming him to a low income, but it's also dooming his wife to a low income for the rest of her life.
What are some of the rules for survivor benefits?
Well, the couple does have to be married at least 9 months at the date of death, with the exception of an accidental death. And the other one is that the survivor must be at least 60, even for a reduced benefit, 50 if he or she is disabled, or a full retirement benefit, that is at age 66, for the full benefit. The survivor benefit is not available if the widow or widower remarries before age 60, unless that marriage ends.
Okay, now let's get into the really good stuff. What is the appliance suspend technique?
Okay, now by the way, for you impatient people, now we're going to get to the interesting strategies, but I felt honor bound to go through the basics because most people don't understand the basics. And if you don't understand the basics, then getting into the nuances of the two techniques I'm going to be talking about are not as meaningful. So first we're going to go through apply and suspend under the old law or existing law. So at full retirement age, in other words, age 66, for those of us born, well, not me, but for you slightly older people born between 43 and 1954, the higher earning spouse applies for and suspends their benefit. The lower earning spouse applies for and collects a spousal benefit, while the higher earning spouse's benefits are in suspension. Then the higher earning spouse claims their own benefits when they are 70.
And can you give our listeners an example?
Okay, let's do an example of Bob and Barbara, who are each 66 years old. And let's assume that Bob's primary insurance amount, that is the amount that he's entitled to at age 66, is $2,500 a month. Let's assume that Barbara's primary insurance amount is $1,400 a month. Now, what Bob does is he applies and suspends when he is age 66. Now, this is important because Barbara cannot get a spousal benefit unless Bob actually applies. So that's the difference between Bob applying and suspending, because what applying and suspending is doing is you're saying, I'm applying for Social Security, but don't pay me anything. What's the difference between applying and saying, don't pay me anything, and just doing nothing? Well, at least under the existing law, if you apply and suspend, that enables your spouse to collect a spousal benefit, which, if you remember, was one half of your primary insurance amount benefit, that is the amount that you were entitled to receive at age 66. So Bob is applying and suspending. Then, notwithstanding the fact that his wife is collecting a benefit based on his record, he is still getting an 8% raise every year for the rest of his life that stops at age 70. So he's getting those 8% raises notwithstanding the fact that his wife is collecting a benefit on an effect on his earnings record. Now, here's part of the beauty of this. Barbara is not collecting on her own record, and even though she is getting a check, her own record continues to grow at 8% between age 66 and 70. So then when she is 70, she'll compare which is higher, either one half of Bob's when he was 66, or her amount, including the 8% raises that she's getting between 66 and 70. And we have just found that this is enormously beneficial, and it's probably one of the reasons why Congress is taking it away, because they're sticking it to the middle class. So one of the limitations is that you can't do this before full retirement age of the primary worker.
Okay, and now we're really getting to why we're here today. What is the new law regarding the apply and suspend strategy?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to take 1 minute out and pat myself on the shoulder, because I've been giving Social Security workshops for a number of years. I've been writing about it. I've been talking about it, and we have been huge advocates of apply and suspend. Many people said, hey, Jim, that sounds great, but what if they change the law? I always said, well, geez, you can never be certain what happens if they change the law, but my best guess is that this is going to be a good thing, that is, if you apply and suspend now, and then they change the law later. And it turned out I was right. So we feel vindicated. So under the new law, the spousal benefits can only be collected if the primary spouse earner is collecting his or her own benefits. If you remember when I talked about Barbara before, she was collecting a spousal benefit even though Bob was sitting there letting his 8% raises accumulate, not collecting a check. So the essence of the new law and the essence of the change for apply and suspend is that the spousal benefit is only available if the primary worker is actually collecting Social Security, not collecting and suspending. So the spousal benefits cannot be collected while the workers' or the primary workers' benefits are suspended.
Okay, so how does the transition period for change affect apply and suspend?
Okay, well, first the good news, and this relates back to what I had said, that the strategies that we had been recommending worked out really well. If you already applied and suspended, so for most of you who are actually already my clients and of the right age, you will be grandfathered. So you can go dance in the street because turns out you did the right thing. You'll be hundreds of thousands of dollars better off, and you don't have to do anything with Social Security. So that's the good news. You can continue to suspend your benefits while getting your 8% raises each year, and you do that until age 70, and your spouse can get a spousal benefit while you are getting your 8% raises, or your 8% raises are accumulating. Now, and here's the tricky part. If you were born before April 30th, 1950, meaning that you will be 66 by April 30th, 2016, you may apply and suspend on or before April 30th, 2016. If you do that, your spouse will still be able to collect benefits based on your earnings record while your own benefits are suspended. Again, if you were born on or before April 30th, 1950, meaning that you'll be full retirement age by April 30th, 2016, you may apply and suspend on or before April 30th, 2016. So, if you were born after April 30th, 1950, your spouse will not be able to collect the spousal benefits unless you are actually collecting benefits on your own record. Because you remember in that example, I had Bob just sitting there not collecting anything, but just getting his 8% raises when he was ready to collect. But if you were born after April 30th, 1950, you're just out of luck. So if apply and suspend is the best strategy for you, and you haven't already done the apply and suspend technique, this is the time to act between now and April 30th, 2016. So what about the transition period? And who will this help and who will this not help? Well, this will help if your spouse will be 66 before you turn age 70. So let's say you are much older than your spouse. Then it really won't help that much because I am, and it's probably a little bit beyond the scope of today's talk, but I'm not a big fan of a spouse collecting a spousal benefit before they reach 66 because of the actuarial reduction and other reasons. But your spouse must wait until they are full retirement age to receive an unreduced benefit. So again, if let's say that you're 66 or you will be on or before April 30th, your spouse is age 64, if you apply and suspend, then you can wait 2 years until you're 68, your spouse is 66, and then your spouse can take advantage of the apply and suspend. That is, she can get the spousal benefit, you can just keep getting your 8% raises, and it would be in effect the same as existing law. But if you fall asleep and you don't do anything, then your spouse is going to miss that opportunity, and you can be tens or actually significantly more worse off than if you do the right thing.
Okay, I can hear people saying, Jim, this is getting very complicated. Is it really worth the trouble?
Well, it depends if you care about your money or not. So in the original analysis, if you do qualify for apply and suspend and you manage to get yourself grandfathered, I have here in front of me a chart that shows the difference between two people with the identical earnings record, identical interest rate, identical tax returns, everything else, and the difference over their lifetime between, let's say, age 62 and if they live well into their 90s is about $2 million. So this is not anything to sneeze at. Even the new regulations, the difference between, for example, both members of the household or both husband and wife taking at age 62 on their own records, depending on the assumptions you use, can still be about a $1.5 million difference. So yes, I would say that it is very important and very worthwhile to go through these complications. In fact, Elaine Floyd says that people are going to have to come in to see us because the options and the calculations are so much trickier now. I'm just kind of talking about the basic law. I am not necessarily applying it in anything but the easiest cases.
Now, what about the claim now, claim more later? I think you said that this is also known as a restricted application strategy.
Yes, yeah, so this is even more popular than the apply and suspend technique, but frankly, it doesn't have quite as much impact. But for certain people, it is by far the better of the two choices. So here's how this works. At the full retirement age, the higher earner spouse applies for benefits, but not on their record. So the higher earner, in the last example, I had the lower earner. But in this example, with the claim now, claim more later, which is also known as a restricted application, it is the higher earner who restricts their application to a spousal benefit. So the lower earner must have filed for benefits on their own record. So what's happening is the higher earner continues to get their 8% raises, and they are still getting a spousal benefit, which is half of their spouse's benefit, which is typically lower than their own. They continue waiting until age 70, meaning that they keep getting those 8% raises, and then when they are 70, then they collect the full amount, including the delayed retirement credits, which is the same way of saying that they're getting their extra 8% per year. Now, under the old law, individuals were not allowed to claim the lesser benefit until they reached full retirement age. Now, the new law says that nobody will do it, no matter what their age, and here's the big exception, unless they will be 62 by December 31st, 2015. So, a little convoluted. Let's go through an example. All right, so let's keep it simple. Mike and Mary are 66 years old. Mike's primary insurance amount is $2,000 a month. Mary's primary insurance amount is $800 a month. Now, with the claim now, claim more later strategy, what we're going to have is Mary file for her benefit at age 66. So she's getting $800 a month. Then Mike files for a spousal benefit at the same time, and he begins collecting $400 a month, which is half of Mary's primary insurance amount. That pattern continues until he is age 70. Then he switches to his maximum benefit, which by then would have been 1.32% times the 2,000 or $2,640. And then Mary adds on her $200 spousal benefit to collect $1,000. So this worked out really well for them. Now, under the new law, if you, meaning you being the primary worker, were born in 1954 or later, including me, and you will not be 62 by the end of 2015, claim now and claim more later, which is the same as filing for a restricted application, will no longer be available. So people who are 62 and younger, and by the way, we can still do this in certain situations if one spouse is older than 62 and one is younger, and I don't want to go into those nuances, but this will be a very viable strategy. But if you were born in 1954 or later, too bad. Now, there are some limitations. the initial claim can't be made before full retirement age or age 66. Under the new law, a worker will not allowed to be able to choose the lesser benefits. He'll have to take the higher of the two, that is, their own benefits or half their spouse's, but they could not, like the claim now, claim more later, take half the spouse's, which is less than their own, and then allow their own to grow. That will be not possible. So if their record is the highest, that's what they'll get. If it's less than the spousal, he'll receive the spousal if he is entitled to it, but he can't take the lower of the two.
So how does the transition period for claim now, claim more later work?
Okay, so if you were born before December 31st, 1953, which means that you will be 62 or older by December 31st, 2015, you will be able to file a restricted application, or to use the claim now, claim more later technique, when you reach your full retirement age. Otherwise, a restricted application will not be allowed. So unlike the apply and suspend technique, where you have to act if you have not already done so, this is not an action item that you need to know right now. It will be when you're 66, but it's the date of birth that controls whether you're allowed to do this or not, not whether you take proactive actions right now.
So what options do listeners have if they're not eligible to take advantage of these strategies before the window closes?
Well, again, I am a big believer in holding off, even for single people, but particularly for married people. So, for example, for people who are too young, I still like the idea in general of waiting until age 70, particularly for the spouse with a stronger earnings record. Then what we like to do in our office is we recognize that Social Security is only part of the picture, but we don't think that it should be analyzed independently. I think you have to look at the whole thing. So, for example, one of the advantages of holding off on Social Security is it creates a lower income for the purposes of Roth IRA conversions. So let's say your goal was to make a Roth IRA conversion up to the top of the 15% bracket. Well, in that case, so taking Social Security earlier is really going to hurt you. And if you can't make as much of a Roth IRA conversion, that you'll be worse off. The other thing about getting the higher Social Security benefit is it changes the way we invest your portfolio. So, for example, if you wait and you have a much more substantial and effect fixed income guarantee, then we as investors are more inclined to have at least a slightly higher percentage of your long-term money invested in the market, meaning that you are likely over time to get a higher return. So if you take Social Security too early and you have to rely too much on your portfolio to get you through, you're going to be worse off because we also have to invest more conservatively. And here's the other thing, and I have heard this a bunch, and I really hope that nobody is in this position, but many people find themselves in this position. So they're 62 years old, they want to retire, they've assumed that they were going to take Social Security when they were 62. Maybe they heard this program and they say, well, gee, that's great, but I can't afford to wait until age 66, you know, let alone age 70. And here's what I would say to somebody who is 62 years old, still working, and wanting to take their Social Security because they can't afford to hold off until they're 70. I hate to be glib, but in that situation, I don't think you can afford to retire. I hate to see people take Social Security at 62, and I'm very sympathetic, particularly if you have a job that you hate or perhaps is a very physical job and you're body starting to break down or something like that. But my big thing is to make sure that both members of the couple, husband and wife, can live in the style in which they are accustomed, and at a very bare minimum, food on the table, gas in the car, roof overhead, and a little money over for Saturday night. And maximizing your Social Security benefits is one of the best ways to guarantee that safe base.
Okay, so Jim, where can our listeners go from here?
Well, just like the government distinguishes your benefits based on your age, I'm going to distinguish your options between your physical location. The people who live in Western Pennsylvania, and they are interested in not only their Social Security strategies that we had talked about today, but also the Roth IRA conversion strategies, making sure that their tax return is reflecting the best strategies, the tax loss harvesting, making sure that their wills and trusts are okay, making sure that there are appropriate provisions for their grandchildren's education, actually looking at the whole thing. And when I say the whole thing, I not only mean the strategies, but also their investments. Of course, we're big believers in low-cost indexing, but if somebody is interested in all the strategies that I just mentioned, plus a whole lot more, we didn't even get into a lot of things like safe withdrawal rate, etc., and they are also interested in having money managed by what we feel is the best money manager, certainly that I know, and his name's P.J. Denuso. I should mention P.J. and I have an arrangement whereby if somebody comes to our office first, and by the way, our minimum is now $600,000. It used to be $500,000. It will probably continue to creep up, but they have $600,000 or more that they are interested in having managed. The deal is our office actually does the strategic work, the Roth IRA conversions, the Social Security. We do what we call running the numbers, which is actually a big deal the first year. And then we have updates every year. And then you have, let's call it strategic reviews every year after the base year strategies have been created. That's what our office does. Then P.J. Denuso and his office, they're the people who actually invest the money. Again, they're using low-cost index funds. We believe that Dimensional Fund Advisors, which is the funds that they use, is the best set of index funds on the planet. They have just been wonderful through the years for PJ and our investors. And PJ and I work together. Now, let's say that you had never heard of me and you just went to PJ and you said, well, PJ, how much do you charge for your services? His fees, to oversimplify, would be 1% on the low end, which, again, is $600,000 and below. And then the more money that is invested, the lower the percentage, as low as 50 basis points, which is 0.5% if there is a lot of money invested. Now, if you come through our office first, it is the same fee, but instead of us charging you a separate fee for our work, we share the fee with PJ. Now, that arrangement whereby our office does the strategies, PJ and his office does the actual money management. And by the way, they do a lot more. They do a personal balance sheet, a personal income statement. They do the stack analysis. You're really getting an awful lot for your money. But anyway, the people that we have in that arrangement, we actually have a 99% retainage rate. We think it is a win-win-win, meaning it is great for us because we get to do our strategies. It's great for PJ and his office because they get to do what they're good at. But the biggest winner is the client because they're getting the combination of those strategies for 1% or less, and they're getting the best of our strategies and the best of his money management. Now, we're kind of picky about who we choose. We have found that this tends not to work too well for people who are out of state. So this offer really is for people who live in Western Pennsylvania or Southwest Florida, where I spend some time in the winter. So we do offer free consultations. And by the way, you still have to qualify, meaning that you have to have the $600,000 of investable assets. Then you would meet with either me or someone in my office, depending on my availability. And we would only go forward if we were compatible. And I really mean that. I'm not interested in working with pains in the you-know-what. And if you don't think that we're the right fit, then we don't go any further. But we actually go through typically 2, sometimes 4 meeting process to determine if we are the right fit. And then if we are, then we start working together again the benefit being that our office does the strategies, the Roth, the Social Security, the how much you could spend, the estate planning, tax planning, etc. PJ and his office, they actually do the true money management, personal balance sheet, personal income statement, asset allocation, bucket analysis, etc.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. And if you are interested in that combination of services and you have at least $600,000 that you would like to have managed, you can do one of two things. You can call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732. That's 412-521-2732. And Alice or whoever answers the phone will be happy to help you begin the process of meeting with Jim or someone in his office. You can also visit paytaxeslater.com. That's paytaxeslater.com and fill out the appropriate forms. If you do not live in either Western Pennsylvania or South Florida and are interested in more information but not services, please visit jameslang.com. That's jameslang.com. I'm Dan Weinberg for Jim Lang. Thanks very much for listening to our emergency audio presentation on these Social Security changes.